Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is your host, Maruf Yusuf, and I have some exciting news to share with you today. Over the last 3 years, I have interviewed many entrepreneurs on this podcast, Muslims who love what they do and make a good living, and shared their stories. Many of you asked me the same question over and over. How can you also be like these successful guests? But what you may not know is that I also talked one-on-one with thousands of Muslim entrepreneurs, professionals, and seekers from all walks of life in the last 10 years. Their question was the same. How do we live our lives as Muslims with meaning and impact? Through these conversations, I have noticed patterns in what successful Muslims do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do what they do. I have taken all of these insights along with my learnings from hundreds of books and put them into a book called 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. This book is based on the Quran and Sunnah and proven business principles. It is for those Muslims who do not limit Islam only to masjids or prayers, daily salah, but see the Islam as a way of life. The book introduces a new way to live for you as a Muslim, inshallah. With a whole year to read and implement these steps, you have nothing to lose, but a lot to gain. And if for any reason you're not happy, you can get a full refund. So take action today and get the book on Amazon as a Kindle, paperback, hardcover, or audiobook on Audible, or you can also get it via the link in the show description. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Get your copy of 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. Embark on a journey of a lifetime towards a more meaningful, impactful life as a Muslim, inshallah. Now, back to the show.
Dear listener, based on many requests from our listeners, we are launching a Muslims on Fire Academy. It's for those who want to do more than just listening. It's for those who not only want to be inspired, but to be one of the Muslims on fire as well. It's for those who want to discover their purpose in life, follow their dreams, and live in prosperity. If this is you, join us for a journey of a lifetime. The introduction course is free. Learn more at academy.muslimsonfire.com. Learn more at academy.muslimsonfire.com.
Hey, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Muslims on Fire. Today, I have a sister from Chicago, and we already talked to her husband a while ago, and today we're going to talk to her to get the other side of the story. Assalamu alaikum, sister Aya, welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam, glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, as we usually start, let's do a brief intro. Can you introduce yourself briefly? Then we'll get into your life story, inshallah.
Sure. My name is Ayat Shakeri. I'm the co-founder of Invest, which is a conversion rate optimization company. I've been doing conversion rate optimization now for around 14 years. We also established or created a software that kind of complements the service that we offer. So just kind of been really busy in the work that I do and the consulting that I do, but that's kind of a little bit about me.
Well, I think that for the listeners, for those who don't know what conversion optimization is, we'll get to that a bit later in the story. But for now, let's stick that word, okay? That's going to hopefully will explain everything. So welcome to the show. As I said, if you have listened to any other episodes, so in the show, we don't have a preset questions. We just get to know you, your life story. And it usually starts from your childhood. Can you tell us where you grew up, what kind of family you grew up, and most importantly, what are the things you remember right now that you think that affected to the person who you are today?
Well, I grew up in Michigan. My parents are immigrants from Syria. And, my parents came in the 70s. And so I'm an 80s child that grew up in Michigan. And really, kind of one of the things that formed my childhood was we used to travel a lot overseas to Syria, which was amazing. And it obviously really grounded me in the love of my dean and, you know, kind of helping create kind of that direction overall for my life. So that was amazing. And I wish that my kids could have that same experience. Right now, obviously they cannot. And it helped me obviously with language, like in terms of just Arabic in general. Another kind of interesting thing about Michigan is I grew up in kind of like a bubble community. So you know, it was a small community. We all did so many activities together. My experiences of like Saturday school and like post Saturday school, you know, life was great. It was so much fun. And I have great memories. And until now, all those childhood friends that I had in Michigan are still my very, very close friends. So,
Syrians or Syrian Muslims from the community, or it was just community of Muslims at that time? Do you remember?
I mean, it was majority Syrian Muslims. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think it's just in general, lots of immigrants tend to flock to their own kind.
That's right.
And that's what they would do. And they would establish kind of their small little communities together and start their masjids together and whatnot. You know, now I think it's a little bit more diverse, but still you find, you know, lots of times the same type of kind of people will flock together. And I don't think it's necessarily right, but it's just the way it is.
I see. I know. I mean, as they say, like, it takes a village to raise a kid. So in this case, it was a community, right? Like that community, Syrian community kind of raised you, helped you raise you with your parents as well, I guess.
And yeah, definitely.
Interesting. As you also mentioned, you were traveling back and forth to Syria when the things were at peace at that time, I guess. They must have a lot of good memory. Okay, sounds good. Let me ask you this. So today you are a conversion rate expert, right? Like that's a very specific niche. I may understand a thing or two, but people may not understand, but we'll get to that, how you get there. But first, like, can you tell us, like, one simple question. Do you kind of enjoy what you do right now?
I do. I really enjoy it. I love the challenge of any new type of client that we're tackling, because the nice thing about what we do is we're very diverse in the type of clients that we can actually tackle. And so you end up learning about so many different types of companies and, you know, get kind of in the weeds of what they do. And that's really interesting to me. And it makes the work very exciting. And we always have a particular problem that we're trying to solve for them. And I love really trying to solve for that problem and trying to, you know, come up with really great solutions. And of course, like achieving great results for them, because once you see those results, you're just like, okay, you know, like I did something really amazing and I was able to make them like, you know, millions of dollars. And that's exactly what they hired me for.
Absolutely. I mean, from what you said, like particular problem, I mean, the one of the main purposes of the show is that to feature you, like Muslims like yourself, like who are doing what they really love and they're making impact, right? Like hundreds of thousands of people and in companies, you know, millions of dollars. But to get there is the main challenge, right? There are many listeners right now, even be listening, either they don't have a clarity, the purpose in life, like what do you want to do? Or some of them maybe know what they like, but they're not really taking that step, you know, extra step to get and to get there what they want to be. So that's why we're going to tend to get into the life questions, understand your path, you know, how you came to be. So tell us about this. Like, when do you think was the earliest time you kind of find out this is something for you, this conversion rate optimization for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting because you don't always, like you said, people don't always know their path. And especially when you go to university, you think you want to do something and you go into something and you study something and then you end up not doing that thing in the end. And that's actually exactly what happened to me. Ever since I was young, I knew for one thing, I wanted to be a teacher, an educator. Okay. I loved children. I loved working with them. I loved educating. That was like my passion. So I studied education as a result and I became a teacher, but,
what were you teaching if you don't mind?
I was teaching kind of all subjects, focus on English and math. Okay. So, certainly, you know, like that was kind of like my path. And I really did think that that's what I would be doing for the rest of my life. And then, things changed a little bit for me because I got married and I moved away from where I was living. And if you know, kind of the system here in the United States is that everywhere you go in every state, you have to actually get certification to teach in that state.
Even teaching.
Yeah.
Lawyers, I wouldn't understand. Lawyers, I know, I understand it's different, but even teaching, wow.
Even teaching, you need to be certified in that state. So you need to kind of take some exams and whatnot. So when I moved from Michigan to Texas.
Okay. South?
Houston.
Houston. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, mid Texas, but it was a good experience for me. But I also, you know, struggled with going back into teaching, and then I, you know, had children. And so I figured I needed to kind of find a different thing to do, you know, because I was spending so much energy with my own children. I didn't want to take away from that, you know, and I, educators, I have so much respect for them. But it's draining. It's a lot
of
energy, you know, to like, you know, work with children and then coming back and also focusing on your children can be challenging. Not to say that my own work right now isn't draining, but that's another.
Every work is, I believe it's kind of, it takes energy. But the question is that if you enjoy the process, right? That's the way we come to that as well.
Exactly. So I think I found education less enjoyable after I had my own children, and I wanted to find something different and something more.
Okay. And when you were teaching at a normal, like a, what's called, you were teaching like a high school or the normal school?
No, I was teaching in elementary school.
Elementary school, it's good. Yeah, with the smaller ones. Yeah, it takes more energy. I can imagine I have small kids, I know. Okay, yeah. Okay. So you first, what you're saying is like, it's like a typical story. Like what I mean typical is that you kind of want to go somewhere, right? You even studied that to be a teacher, haven't you, right? You even had studied that, yeah, and you were teaching at one state, then you get married, the environment changes, but then you have to certify it again, and this is where now you're saying, is it the thing I want to do? So what happened then?
So I actually started taking some business courses.
Interesting.
And I registered at the college in Houston. It was like a local college. And then I also started just doing kind of some consulting work. So there was at the time, this one very similar to kind of like what Upwork is, a similar program where you can just be a freelancer and people can hire you to look over a copy. And I had mentioned to you that I had studied English.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my major. You know, I would look over their copy, and what became very apparent was at the time, people were very interested in SEO copy specifically. Mm. And if you know, of course, this is like 2006-ish.
Okay.
At that time, exactly, the early days where you can like just have a lot of like keywords in your copy and that would get you ranking.
That's
true. So lots of people were looking for that service. So I started providing that service actually. And started
learning. Let me ask you this. Yeah. Like you were a teacher, like you came to another state. Like I want to understand, I think this is one of those points, like how on earth do you take that experience as a teacher and change the business? Like usually people don't do that. So what kind of inspired you to do that?
Do you struggle with Dean and Dunya balance in your life? Meet Ummaland.com, a Muslim social network where your ego, nafs, is not in the center. It is a place to feed your soul with daily inspiration, to make new Muslim friends, and connect with Ummah. Visit www.ummaland.com and download free for your iPhone or Android.
Was an option.
Okay.
And I saw that kind of SEO was a direction. That's what kind of inspired me to be like, okay, like maybe like, you know, there's something more to this SEO. And, you know, and that's when I was inspired to take a few business courses and specifically in marketing.
I see.
Again, like, especially when I'm focused on copy for websites, I did need to know about marketing in order to be able to like understand a little bit more about, again, that psychology of the customer or the visitor to the website and whatnot. So that's kind of what inspired me there.
So, okay, that's very interesting insight. So I think probably, as you said, your major also in English, you kind of felt comfortable, right? That's a copy. That's not selling. That's not marketing. I'm just going to do the copy part, right? Because one of the things I always, because, you know, we have also agency, we talk to people and say, oh, I don't like selling. I don't like marketing. And they're just confused between the two. The marketing is always selling. It's storytelling at the end of the day. But interesting. So you kind of took that approach. Like, was it like a long time course, like 2-3 years, or it was short one?
No, it was kind of like just semester, you know, based courses.
Wow, okay.
I think I took like, you know, at least like, you know, 2-3 semesters of different business and marketing courses just to kind of familiarize myself. And then I was lucky enough to also go on like a 2-day retreat with some well-known CRO experts in our industry. Okay. And that was like very like illuminating. And that's kind of after that retreat, I, you know, thought, oh, this would be really interesting to kind of pursue conversion rate optimization more full time, because at the time, really, everybody was talking about SEO, but they weren't talking about the usability and the UX experience and the, you know, conversion rate optimization of a specific website. How do I make sure to convert more of those visitors into actual subscribers or, you know, contacts or, you know, purchasers. And that's kind of really what intrigued me. And I'm really definitely, maybe it's because of my background, but I'm definitely interested in psychology and like the psychology of like the consumer and the visitor to the website.
And I think it's the time now we're going to explain what CRO is, because it's going to get a bit complicated a bit for the average listener. So tell us in your own words, what is CRO?
So every website essentially has what is kind of defined as a conversion rate, which is the amount of visitors that come to your site and then take an action. And that would be kind of like what would define your actual conversion rate. And so conversion rate optimization is, how do I improve that overall process to make sure I get more of the people that come to the website to take that action that I want them to take? And that's really what we do. And a lot of it has to do is grounded in really, you know, psychology and kind of understanding the visitor's motivations, and then based on that, creating a better experience and a better design to really persuade them to move forward with whatever action that is that you want them to take.
That's great. So in a nutshell, it's the way I explain it is like it's a kind of dawah work, right? Like in a way, when you're talking to Muslims, like conversion, say, what are you talking about? Like, are you converting people? Yeah, I mean, we're not converting non-Muslims to Muslims, but in a way, so as you said, in a nutshell, so every website, the purpose is the website is like not just the visitors, they want to take action, right? Ideally, you want to convert your visitors to buyers, you know, or the one or who is signing up. So that whole process, as you explained, is a conversion rate optimization. Actually, like this is one of the things I'm also one of the areas I'm really passionate about, even though I never kind of fully followed it, but I really understand why you would like to be interested in that. Yeah, because I remember from my story, like I come from the multimedia design. I was studying design and work like a couple of 10 years ago, we'll build websites, you know, for clients and watch it like nothing happened. What's going on? We'll be something beautiful. We'll say take action. But then you understand just building something shiny is not the main goal, right? Because as you said, what's really important is the psychology. I look at psychology as that the study of human behavior, why we do what we do, right? In a nutshell, that's what it is. Like when you're building a website for pet store is different than when you're building a website for, let's say, crowdfunding, right? That do different things, that two different purposes, that two different strategies you should take. And to do that, I was diving into like analytics, conversion optimization, search engine optimization, etc. And among those, you and your team, your husband, folks, the focus on the conversion rate optimization. So anybody who is listening, who has a website or project and who want to get a better results, you should go and check it out, what they do. I've checked the website. They actually work some very amazing clients as well. That will be something very, very useful. So so back to the story now. So tell me, like, how did you find it, like being a teacher then compared to that's the new adventure, new journey, right? Like conversion rate optimization is a big journey. Like, how did you find it out? Like, how did you start? Like in the start, it's always difficult, right? And especially this could be good for the listeners who are about to start or they just started their thing. In the beginning, you don't see much traction. So how do you go about that?
I mean, of course, like those first beginning, like you said, the start and when you begin anything new, it's not easy. I think we certainly had, or at least at that time, there was an advantage in the sense that there weren't a lot of companies that did what we did.
Early to market.
Exactly. So when you have early to market, you can make a lot of like mistakes and you can fumble and do this and do that, but you're like the first. And we also had, and so just so you know, kind of college, he was obviously helping me start things out in the beginning, but he didn't actually officially join me until 2008. He was a software developer and a consultant with another company. And he officially took the plunge of like leaving his company, and we were going to do this full time in around 2008, early 2009.
So he joined after 2 years, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I had, and again, it was like kind of like a side thing. We didn't really think it was going to be anything necessarily big, but when we saw that there was so much demand and there were so many clients and customers that wanted the service, we recognized that, hey, like we actually really are onto something. We should really offer this more kind of full time. It was really scary for us because, as you know, I mean, we have children, we have mouths to feed, we have like, you know, payments to make. So for him to leave a stable income and a stable job into something that we were really not sure of was really scary. But I think one of the primary motivations also was in 2009, we were working on a book, and we published a book on conversion rate optimization. And that gave us a lot of
credibility
in the market, and we became like, you know, very well known as a result of that. So that push was something that, you know, made Khaled feel like, okay, I can leave my stable job and focus on Invesp, and we can really make something more of this company and grow it.
So startups, there are two lessons here. The first lesson is, do not destroy the old house before you build a new one, right? You cannot just, because this is what the people think. Oh, I'm gonna go to, you know, Silicon Valley. I'm gonna start. That doesn't work like that, you know. Maybe in the movies, but I think what Khaled did was a smart approach, because you were I think you were kind of testing the market, right? You're testing market. There's a market. There's potential. Even then, he was like, oh, let me think about it. he's going to
get salary. Let's keep the stable check coming
exactly,
in.
Exactly. And as you said, like he was giving some time, but he wrote the book. And I think that, yes, you were early in the market, but also put you like, especially when you write a book. That's another second lesson is actually about writing books. Especially what I experienced is that writing about nonfiction books is that, especially if you're in an industry like this, it could mark your place in a way, your thought leadership, you know, this is what we do. And because this is actually one of the reasons I started podcasting as well, is that this conversation, what's going on right now, it's amazing. I used to talk to people like this, but it will go away, you know, like, that's good. I will enjoy and go. And I said, why don't we just start sharing this, you know, first of all, to benefit the listeners. And also our clients, they listen to this podcast, and because we are building the trust, right? We are building trust for your listeners and for our listeners. They say, okay, these people are actually legit people. They talk about normal things. Because whenever you want to do stuff, as you said, you have to take that fence down, right? That building the fence, it takes a lot of time. Because everybody in the market is screaming, hey, I'm the best, I'm the good. Instead, you know what, let me teach you how it's done. Just building that trust. I think that propelled you in that state. But I'm going to ask you one question though. About the brother Khaled's involvement, do you think, like, honestly, like, I know he has a good experience in IT and he was in startups. Do you think you would be where you are today without his jumping on board?
I don't know. I can never know. That's like God, in God's knowledge only. Yeah. We don't know if that would be possible.
Yeah, absolutely. But my question is about what happened there. But my question is like, but you can see his like involvement, right? Like what kind of, my question is like in a different way, what kind of things he brought to the team that kind of complimented you? That's the question, I guess.
Well, you know, and I think that's a kind of a key thing, especially if you have two spouses working in
that's another challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge. And I think you need to make sure that you divide and conquer and you separate things so that everybody's aware of like what their strengths are and what they can kind of really contribute to the overall process. So that's kind of the critical part, is that, well, I had already been focused on working on the projects and working with the clients, and that client deliverability was really like kind of my domain. Mm-hmm. But, you know, kind of working on sales and also, you know, obviously, like I mentioned, we did develop some software, and that kind of IT perspective and development was definitely something that that Khaled,
because he was doing the similar things before, right?
Exactly. That's something that he was very comfortable with.
I see.
So from that perspective, you know, certainly he contributed and he kind of was able to give that. I mean, you know, and again, I wouldn't know that if I were alone, would I still be where I am? I'm not really sure. I could never
let me ask a question then. So today, as you said, you have Invesp, which is a service, right? Agency that helps with the conversion rate optimization on the website. Then you have the FigPi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, FigPi. And that's the software. Would you end up creating the software if the Brotherhood was not there? That's the question.
Most likely not. Yeah. Okay. I don't think I would have gone in the direction of software.
Okay.
You know, and the thing is, like, you know, in general, I think, again, like it's that finding that balance, especially when you're a married couple, to make sure that you're dividing and conquering. But I can't tell you that it wasn't rocky, you know, certainly in the beginning and kind of like there's differing opinions and of how you want kind of things to go, that has an impact. And I also would say that anybody who's starting out a business with their spouse, it's very important that everything that you work on, it's true that one person should be kind of handle certain aspects, but it is important that when anything new is being introduced or a new process or whatnot, there should be kind of buy-in from both sides to make sure that, again, there's everybody's on the same page and, you know, all kind of business partners are aware of those different aspects that you're kind of adding within the process. Just to make it, again, like it's the key is you don't want a business to impact the relationship.
Absolutely.
And you certainly don't want that to, you know, impact the family. And you don't want to always be talking about business because it does become part of your life. then it kind of starts defining the marriage.
There's no home and work balance. There's nothing like that, right?
Yeah, it's tough. It could be really tough. Like you have to make those changes in order to get that balance, really.
Childhood Questions are sponsored by Ali Huda. Ali Huda is a video on demand streaming platform for Muslim children where they can watch cartoons and shows while learning about Islam the fun way. If you are a Muslim parent, this will be one of your best investments. Visit www.alihuda.com for a 7-day free trial. Now back to the show.
So it's a bit question, a bit tough question. Like, I mean, that's all nice. That in theory, like, was there a time, like, especially the married couple, was there a time that what was a really, really difficult decision you have to make, and how did you solve that?
Well, you know, our business was doing really, really well, and then in 2012, the Syrian revolution happened, and.
Yeah.
Khaled became actually really involved and, you know, really wanted to help with that effort. So he actually ended up moving to Istanbul before, like, you know, our family and kind of just like walked away from everything.
Wow.
He took a sabbatical.
You see, that's why we are talking to you. He didn't mention that in the podcast. Just tell me more about this.
Oh yeah. He kind of took a sabbatical and just left, you know, and, it was very difficult. Honestly, that was probably like one of the most difficult periods of time, like in terms of business and in terms of like our marriage, in terms of so many different aspects.
But he was doing for a greater cause though, right? He wants to help.
Yeah, it's a good cause, but you know, you have like responsibilities
that's
too.
True.
So
that's true.
I think you need to balance, you know what
that's
I'm saying?
True.
And that's the thing. Like sometimes people say, oh, I want to do this really good cause, but then in the end they're affecting like the closest people to them. So anybody who's going to do something like that, you really need, again, it's like buy-in, you know, like, and you have responsibilities, you have to make sure you're addressing that. So, really effectively, Khaled was also one of the things that he was responsible for was sales. So when he disappeared, our sales dried up tremendously.
Wow. So that's the impact. That is the impact, right?
Major impact. We had to start our business from zero. You know, like we had a name, we had recognition. And like for 3 years, we disappeared off the face of the earth.
Wait a second. That's going to be interesting. Probably this is going to be a very interesting part. So Brother Khaled said, look, this is something going on. I really want to go out and help my people. So he got up, but you and family stayed in the States and he moved to Istanbul because you want to be closer to Syria. Is it what happened?
Yeah. So he moved, and then after a year,
bold move.
After a year, you know, like it, I basically it was either I moved to Istanbul or everything's going to be fizzled. So we actually picked up my kids and we moved to Istanbul to be close to him. And you know, like again, like he was involved in that for like at least like, you know, 3 years, but it killed our business. You know, like I was working with clients and I was again doing what I did best, but I, you know, like the other portions and the other sides of the business were affected tremendously as a result of that. So we brought our business back from the dead.
So, I mean, that's amazing. Like, I think what I feel like that he never mentioned this in the podcast. So I'm going to get back to on this one. And I think he must have trusted you in some way to take that bold move. I don't know. I'm just taking a hunch. Like, imagine, for example, in my marriage, like if I want to go somewhere like that far, like if I'm not sure, let's say, that my spouse is going to support me, it would be difficult to do. Somehow he must have that courage that he must have trusted in you that you will be okay. Was it something like that?
Yeah, definitely. Listen, I mean, I'm passionate about it. I'm certainly like a, you know, I see that there was a need for people to be involved and and I knew that there was a sacrifice that would be made as a result of being involved in trying to help the effort. But, you know, but unfortunately, A is the effort, you know, hopefully nothing is lost, but, you know, obviously things didn't go as planned when it came to that. And as a result, you know, again, like our business suffered. So we had to kind of really push to bring things back. You know.
And today you have, you have some kind of satellite office in Turkey as well, right?
Right. So as a result of us being kind of in Istanbul, we, you know, obviously the cost of hiring in Istanbul is a lot less than hiring in the US. So we took advantage and, you know, established an office there and, you know, like really pushed development more than we could have possibly in the US. So, you know, alhamdulillah, like, you know, obviously when you ever look back in retrospect, everything looks 2020, right? Everything looks better. And you're like, oh, alhamdulillah, it was for advantage. When you're in the midst of it, you feel like it's possibly the worst thing that ever happened to you. But when you look back and alhamdulillah, everything kind of really works out to your advantage. And, you know, it's all khair in the end, inshallah. And nothing is lost. Hopefully all the efforts, hopefully everybody will get, you know, rewards for the efforts that they put in.
Absolutely. Okay, that's good. So that was like we're talking about 2016 or earlier, like when when was the time you took the business back online? Like when was the time you guys like okay, that's it, we did our thing. Maybe it did affect or it did not. Then now you are back in US with a family, but how is back? Right?
Yeah, probably end of 15, 16. Okay. That's when we really like pushed to get invest back up and running. And even those 2 years, you know, like we had even stopped like speaking engagements. I was back on the road traveling to like the UK and back to the US to do like lots of different speaking engagements. Again, getting our name out there and so that people within our industry were aware that we still existed because like I said, we disappeared for a while.
I see. Well, you never know what you're gonna get in life, right? Sometimes they're bumpy road. It's going to be interesting thing. So like today, where do you see your agency? Because right now it's not agency anymore. It's also product itself, right? But today, as of today, like when you look at this, like how is like the revenue generated between 50-50 or agency is more or the product is more? Like where is it right now? You've been in the business for a while now, right? Like we're talking about like more than 10 years now, right?
Yeah, well, 2006, that's when we established our business.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, things kind of died down for a while. And then 2016, we were kind of back up and running. Our tool actually has now like 1,000 subscribers, which is excellent. Cool. So it's still growing. Obviously, the revenue that we're getting from our consulting business is still the majority of the business.
Okay.
So I would say probably like, you know, more like 80-20 at this point in time. Okay. We're hoping to make a big push with the tool so that we can kind of raise that and balance it more. And really the objective of the tool is to be a little bit more choosy when it comes to clients, you know, because it's some projects, like depending on, again, like, remember what I mentioned to you, that what I like most is working with like those interesting, you know, like kind of problems and interesting clients that are unique and different than what I've worked with before. So having that flexibility it would be really nice.
Okay. So since I know the industry a little bit, I'm going to ask a bit question about your service, a product as well, because I never used it yet. Maybe I will. So here's the thing, like, but I have used other projects for some of the clients before. I know, I think that the other two top names come into my mind, Optimizely, right? You may know them. And also another one, it's called the Visual Website Optimizer, right? VWO. So how the FigPi is different compared to them?
So actually, I would compare our tool more to like a Hotjar. Are you familiar with Hotjar?
Yeah, I know Hotjar, yes.
Yeah. So we do offer the A-B testing, which is the portion that would be similar to what Optimizely and VWO offer.
Sure.
So that's, again, like, you know, we distribute the traffic between two different designs, and then we see which one the visitors respond to more positively. And then the other tools that are within FigPi platform are video recording or session replay. So you can watch the videos, how they interact with your specific website. Also polls. So like sometimes you see on websites, you'll visit them, there's a little poll that comes up. So you can ask certain questions to kind of gauge what's going on with the visitor. And heat maps, which is essentially shows you where, you know, the visitors are clicking, how far they're scrolling on a specific page. And, you know, the unique thing, of course, that we have is, again, Hotjar, for example, doesn't have the A-B testing engine. We also have some very unique targeting. So we can target, like, for example, if you're running a specific campaign on Google Ads and you want to see how that campaign responds to a specific A-B test, or how that campaign heat map looks, or how that campaign does in video recording, we can target all of that. So that kind of gives the tool that uniqueness, and it's one platform, one line of code, and you have all access to all of those different tools one set of data.
I see. So it's like, as you said, I think it'll be a bit technical. What you're saying is that it's not just A-B testing like Optimizely and WO.dat, and now you are more like a Hotjar, as you said, a lot of suite of tools. And the one thing you also mentioned is also the crazy egg used to do the heat maps.
Heat maps.
So exactly. So heat maps and all those things plus the A-B testing, that just makes it all in one platform. Okay.
Exactly.
And you raised the one quick question like about attribution, right? Attribution is one of the biggest problems in many businesses, in some of the businesses we have also. Does your tool offer attribution as well or no? Like you mentioned about A-B testing, but only for those A-B testing, not overall attribution, does it?
No, not overall. Like it, so there's no like, there's no way for you to attribute, like, are you saying like in terms of like targeting or?
I'm talking about like, look, for example, we have e-commerce client, he gets traffic from Facebook, he gets traffic from Google, he gets traffic from affiliates in different place. And now we're getting source of data on Facebook, shows one data, on Google shows another data, and there's discrepancy, you know?
Right.
Like, and so ideally what we're looking for is like a third party sort of source of truth where you wanna say what actually happened, you know? Because Facebook begins to like boost their numbers, we're doing this much sales, but with reality, we know it's not entirely the truth. And then you have analytics, it shows the other parts of the data. Mm-hmm. And we also know sometimes it doesn't count some of the things. So as a business, as you know, it's crucial, you know, where you're putting the money and how much you're getting out of it. And I think we did the research in the market, like there are some tools like Segment, but it doesn't fully cover the issue. I think there is a big need there, like a software that can fix the attribution problem. You know, that's I'm just putting that there.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that one of the things that, because like I said, we do targeting, but one of the other kind of aspects that we're going to add that hasn't been kind of launched on our tool is segmentation, where you can segment, you know, specific types of visitors, specific sources of traffic that are coming and know kind of like how they're performing for that. But that's something that is in our plans to release, but has not been released yet.
Psst. If you are an entrepreneur with a product or service for the Muslim market, let's get in touch. We are Halal.ad, a marketing agency and ad network for the ever-growing Muslim market. We can help you reach millions of Muslims to grow your business. Visit www.halal.ad for a 30-minute free consultation. Now back to the show.
Okay, so I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to go to the main conversation. Otherwise, it may get really technical. We don't want the listeners to be confused with what we are talking about, jargons, I guess. So, looking back to where you are today, as you said, sometimes you have to look 2020 because when you're going through, it doesn't make sense. But now things might make up a different take on the thing. So, like, what would you say for the listeners and those who are on the fence, who are just saying, you know, shall I do my thing or my own thing, what I have in mind, or should I do this or that? And especially for Muslims, you know, we come with a lot of baggage. Like, I don't know, is it something to do with us? But as you know, a lot of parents from Asia, they want their kids to be either a lawyer or engineer or you know, and that sort of thing. But for those people, it could be tough to take decision on their own to be, for example, CRO expert, right? I mean, I've never heard of what it is. Like, what would you say, like, is it worth the journey? Is it worth the struggle? Is it worth the whole thing?
So I would say a couple of things. A is, certainly it's worth it if that's kind of like your dream. But I think in general, you do need to have some sort of kind of a mentor that guides you along the way. And I think that that's definitely something that we're maybe lacking in the Muslim community. It's hard to find experts. It's hard to find people that have, you know, that experience that can provide that insight and that the direction that, you know, somebody would need. I also would say, like, you know, again, you know, going back to, I feel very strongly about, you know, women, Muslim women, they might find also that things are holding them back, or there's an expectation from, like, you know, a spouse or, you know, like a parent or something like that. And certainly that should never stop. And, you know, and I hope that you Muslim women that are listening to this podcast would reach out to me. I'm very passionate about, you know, helping. And if there's anything I could do to assist and guide or give advice about anything that they would need, I'm there. And I just want to make sure I put that out there.
Thank you very much.
But yeah, you know, in general, like I think mentorship and, you know, making sure you kind of like read and know kind of like the ins and outs as well. There's so much information now. We're like really lucky to be in an age where you can just Google something and find out so much information. Obviously, you have to really also make sure that the information that you're reading is authentic. Mm. That's a little bit of a struggle, but there is a wealth of information out there. So making sure that you're up to date and you're aware of everything that's going on within the industry that you're interested in. And then don't limit yourself to a specific field, because there is, like, you know, we've mentioned today, now learning kind of a little bit about what I do. There's a wealth of opportunity out there, and there's so many different industries and things that we can do, and where really Muslims are needed to shine beyond the health industry and engineering industry. There's so many areas where we need kind of Muslims to bring in their expertise and be kind of like those examples, and hopefully, you know, we'll get more and more people to be interested in those different areas as a result.
So I have a question for you. I mean, first of all, thank you for your generosity, and I think with the transcript we'll share probably your LinkedIn profile so people can reach out to you on that one, ask for advice. Very kind of you. I mean, but my question is that you said the mentorship is important. I think that's, I want to understand, like, first of all, how do you come to this conclusion? Is it because that is your first, your personal experience? And secondly, like in those difficult days, starting the days for you, did you have a mentor? Or if so, how did you find that? How did you find your mentor? And how do you look for a mentor? I mean, that's the question, I guess.
Yeah, I think the reason why I mention it is because I really did stumble in the beginning. I was new.
Everybody
I didn't
does.
Really know.
Everybody does. Everybody
exactly.
Does.
And I think that if I had, you know, some direction or somebody that could possibly give advice, maybe some of the choices that I would make would be a little bit different. You know, and again, like I get, it's all good in the sense of, you know, we're always thankful and grateful for everything that we have. But over the years, I've recognized that when I've relied on people for advice and finding kind of like people within my industry that could give me that direction, it's illuminated a lot of things in my life and changed things and changed an approach that I might have. So that's really like, I only am mentioning mentorship out of experience when I didn't have it. And then when I did, kind of like the difference in terms of how I felt and the direction and the way that, you know, again, like I'm a lot more focused because of
all the mistakes, right? You can skip some of them at least.
Exactly. Like, hopefully you don't fall into like those blunders because you have somebody there that's telling you, hey, like you should watch out for this. You should be careful of this. And they kind of give you that direction.
How did you find your mentor? If you don't mind me asking, what did you look for and how do you find a good mentor? Like from your experience?
For me, of course, again, being involved in some of the industry events that we are a part of, I haven't found a Muslim mentor, but certainly like, you know, mentors that are experienced within my field that I've, you know, either spoken with on the same panels and then as a result reached out and had conversations to kind of help, you know, with kind of some issues or problems. And you might have multiple depending on the problem or issue that you're facing.
Okay, fair enough. I think, so if I ask another question, like when you're looking for a mentor, are you looking mainly for expertise or sometimes, you know, also how to like, on a spiritual level as well? Like, I mean, what I mean is that is their heart and mind at the right place? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I think both are important, certainly. Okay. You know, like I think a spiritual mentor is essential. Actually, like, you know, for many years, my spiritual mentor actually is in Syria. And so for so many years, obviously I've been cut off. So like, that's been a little bit challenging. It does help and it, you know, gives like, you know, that sense of purpose in life in general, especially when we all go through kind of our ups and downs and that helps. But it, you know, when it comes to business, it's more like expertise related. So, you know, specifically, for example, we included recently a new kind of aspect to our process, which is called jobs to be done theory.
Okay.
And seeking kind of mentorship and expertise from that, so somebody who's very much in that field was very helpful. Okay. So that's kind of the kind of, you know, like mentorship when, okay, well, I'm going to incorporate this into my process, but I'm really not sure on the know-how. So I'll go to kind of like that expert to help me.
So you reach out proactively, right? Is it right?
Yeah, definitely.
That's cool.
I mean, you have to.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Is there... Our kind of conversation is coming to an end. I just want to ask the question, like, is there any question I should have asked maybe I haven't and you want to explain or you want to share?
No, I think that's
okay.
That's pretty much, I don't know if there's anything else that I would necessarily add, you know, like obviously, like there's so many different aspects to business. So again, like, you know, anybody.
So let me ask you one. Let me ask you. Yeah. I just remembered one. So as a Muslim woman business owner, what does success mean to you?
I would say that I would never put a kind of, and maybe this is a great cliche, but I wouldn't put a dollar sign next to success.
You would or you would not?
I would not, but it certainly helps.
Okay.
but you know, I think success is just being happy with what you're doing in terms of, you know, like the work that you're producing and the type of work that you're doing. And then, you know, seeing obviously whatever it is that you're doing and contributing to, like, for example, in my case, success for me is when I see clients actually achieving the results that, you know, I've promised them, as a result of, you know, the consulting that I've done. So that for me, you know, like, of course I'm happy with what I'm doing and I'm also making sure that I'm achieving those results. That to me is the success that I'm looking for. And okay. Of course, success is also constant growth. I think that if you're stagnant and you're not moving forward and you're not always learning and you're not always evolving, then you're not going to be, it's going to impact your happiness and it's going to impact the results and it's going to impact overall, you know, that success that you're trying to achieve.
Okay. Interesting approach. Thank you very much. So can you tell the listeners where, and watchers as well, of course, viewers. So can you tell us like where they can find you? What is the best place to reach you at for mentorship or any other questions? If you want to try out your product, what would be the best place to find you?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. Definitely if you reach out to me on LinkedIn, I will respond to you. I'm also available via email. My email is my name at invesp.com. Those are the best places really to reach me. I actually have an Instagram account that I'm trying to kind of activate. It's still at the beginning stages, but that's another place where people can find me.
Sounds good. And I will share all those links and as a transcript as well. And thank you very much for being here and sharing your story. I'm inspired. So I'm going to talk to Brother Khaled about his 3 years absence. It's going to be interesting to talk with him. So we have to get the both stories.
I won't get in trouble as a result of that.
No. So that's why we have to get the both sides of the story, right? Because he told his story, but now the other story as well. Thank you very much.
No problem. Wa alaikum assalam.